Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, folks. This is Dave Schmidt. I'm your host here on the Sedona Connection. It's nice to be back with you again on Wednesday, January 29th. It's 7 o'clock here in Sedona, Arizona, 6 o'clock on the West Coast, 9 p.m. on the East Coast. And for you folks in Europe, I don't know what time it is right now. I don't even want to think about that. No, really, I'm glad you folks that you join in because, you know, what's really, really interesting about the Internet now and with Blog Talk Radio is we get people from all around the world. I get about, 10% of the people that listen to this program, whether it's either live or archived, are from overseas. And the rest of us are here at United States and Canada. So it's amazing what the Internet is doing for us in being able to change our world. We truly are moving back into an era where the world is flat. And by what I mean by the world is flat is anybody around the world can be our common neighbor because of the instant communication. Let me give an illustration, which is just wonderful. My son, Matt, you know, had graduated from college a few years back. He was a communications major, couldn't find a job. So he decided to do something different, went to Korea. He is right now in South Korea finishing up his third year of teaching English, and he's going to be coming back home. But it's amazing how I can go on Skype, which is absolutely free, and he and I are here carrying on a video conversation with each other where we see each other on video, let alone verbally, and we have this wonderful time together. So it's the world is becoming very, very small. And you know what, folks? That's what's empowering us in this whole change, in this whole transition that's happening with this new global currency reset. Okay, before I get in too much into the program tonight, what I want to do here now is let me just take care of a couple of housekeeping measures. I did talk about this a little bit on the video update that I sent out today. Some of you folks that are on my newsletter list, and if at any point in time you want to be on the regular newsletter list, go to the website, thesedonaconnection.com, and in the right-hand column, you can click on here so you know join the email list, and you'll be on the email newsletter list. But some of you are saying that you're not getting my newsletters. I don't know what that is, folks. Appears most of you seems to be around that you're people who use Gmail as your email server. It could be your browser. It could be your setting connections. It could be showing up in your spam folder, but I don't know. I wish I had an answer to that. I just don't. But here's the other way to do this. If you want to be on the newsletter list and you're not receiving them, then go and friend me on Facebook, because I post all of the newsletters there as well. And you can go in and just me as an individual, Dave Schmidt, and friend me that way, and then you're going to get all my other stuff as well. Or you could go to Dave Schmidt-The Sedona Connection. And that link is also on my website, this is SedonaConnection.com. And you can come into it that way, and then you will get just the postings that I do regard the Sedona Connection issues and stuff like that. I enjoy having a lot of you as friends on Facebook because what I do, I browse through all the stuff that you post, and I'm picking up a lot of data, a lot of info, and a lot of links that come through those means. Now, I don't have time to do everybody, so please understand that. What I do is I browse about 6 different blog sites. And I'm on some email lists for some really good sites. And then what I also do is I receive what comes through the Facebook. That's what gives me a lot of the contact information, a lot of the stuff that I see that's coming out. So you can do that through the Facebook route. And if you are also, if some of you have done nothing more than you have subscribed to the YouTube channel, and if you want to be on the newsletter email list, do the same thing. As you see, I'm really going to the format where more and more I'm using the video versus the written parts of the newsletters. I like it better. I think a lot of you have commented that you like it better. You can watch them as you want to. Usually stays go somewhere around 10 to 15 minutes periodically. If it gets in depth, I may go a little bit more than I did a couple weeks ago. But that's what's there. Those are the housekeeping measures, okay? New developments in the last week. Wow. Nothing big in the news other than the fact, here's what I am noticing. Mainstream media is beginning to talk about an economic collapse, a stock market collapse, a global currency reset. Now, they're not coming out and talking about it out in the open as we discuss it here on the radio programs, on the blog sites, et cetera, and stuff like that. But they're beginning to allude to the fact that It's not a very good picture. Now, why do they not just come out and talk about it out in the open? And also, I was talking with a friend today, and she was saying, why didn't President Obama kind of allude to this global currency problem in his State of the Union address? Here's what I think. Two reasons. Number one, first of all, remember, all mainstream media is controlled by the cabal. They own and operate all the biggest media outlets, and those that are not a part of it, they have huge influence on them because, in essence, they could crush them overnight if they wanted to. They do not want this going public. They have always resisted anything of a global currency reset for us because it's back to their wanting to be in power and control. And it's a form of an addiction, the sense of an addiction to being in power, being in control, being better than other people. It's an addictive state of mind that I believe that they have. The other thing is, if the media and the president was to come out and say this, it could create a panic all around the world that we aren't ready for. What do I mean by that? If all of a sudden you heard on the news that there's going to be a global currency crash, what would you do as an individual? If you had not been aware of this stuff, was not aware of what was going on, you'd probably go and pull your money out of the bank, which would create a run on the banks. You'd probably go out and buy a bunch of gold, which would create a gold shortage, and you would start doing all kinds of what I call preservation actions to take care of, because it's natural reaction to say, uh-oh, things are going down. I better take care of myself to make sure that I'm safe. It's a survival of the fittest mentality. And it wouldn't happen just here in the United States. It would happen all around the world. And why? Because the United States currency is still the world's reserve currency. And there is more currency cash held outside of the United States than inside the United States. So that's why they don't do it. But here's what I have been noticing. There have been reports on CNBC, which is the business channel. There have been reports on Fox Business News. There have been reports on the Bloomberg Financial News reports. There have been reports in the Wall Street Journal. And I did mention one that really kind of surprised me, is there was a report. It was very subtle, but it was on the Drudge Report. Now, if you don't know what the Drudge Report is, it's the biggest political blog in the world, and my understanding is it is also the single most read blog on the planet. I have read where they have close to 1 billion, you heard me right, billion hits per month. That's how huge the Drudge Report is. Matt Drudge seems to be one of those guys that has been able to come up and get inside intel and give you the first scoop on it before anybody else. And for Matt Drudge to come right out and said, prepare an exit plan. And what is he talking about? Prepare an exit plan for any investments or money that you may have in the stock market. Now, let me report something else about the stock market. The Dow is down again over 150 points today. The Dow has dropped about 900 points in the last week to a week and a half. On one hand, this could be an early indication a preliminary indication of what's going on. Because, you know, the traders on Wall Street, they're not stupid. They're very professional at what they do, and they're the best in the world at what they do. And they have their head and their ear to the grindstone of being able to get any inside scoop about any of the stuff that's going on. Now, you notice they never talk about this global currency reset, because if they did, it would create a fear and a panic, and it would create, you know, people running and pulling their money out of the market, and they don't want that to happen. They make money predominantly by people with the market going up. They want the market to go up. The professionals know how to short the market, but the vast majority of them, they always want a market going up because that's where the best money is made. So they're very cautious about that. But I watch the market because, you know what, when they get wind of some assurance that there's substance to what's going on and something is really going to happen, they're going to be on top of it, and they're going to be one of the first ones in the gates to be able to be pulling their money out. Now, a 900-point drop in the market is about a 5 to 6% drop from its high about a week and a half ago. That's not unusual, folks. We have had basically what is called a bull run market. We have had a market bubble. It's just been going up and up and up and up when normal market fundamentals shouldn't have it going up. And there is a point in time that all market traders know that, gee, it's going to go into a correction at some point in time, because right now the market is in what is called an overbought condition. And so what happens is when it gets to that point, and it's a kind of a psychological effect, is what they do is they start selling to take their profits off the table. Now, part of the drop was predicated by the news that the Federal Reserve is cutting back on the quantitative easing program, because it's all this money being pumped out by the Fed that has been pushing the market up. And so they're going to want to step in and have a slight pullback. A 10% correction is a normal, accepted correction by the market traders. So they don't see this as something that's being predicated by a possible global currency collapse, a global currency reset. They're not really seeing that yet. So when people start reporting about all the stuff going on, that the market is starting to go on, and Art Cashin last Friday gave a report of, you know, the currency resets, and that's the reason why the market dropped over 350 points on Friday. Folks, that's not abnormal. That's just I don't want to say every day, but that's normal cyclical market events that go on. Could it be some of it inside information coming out? Possibly, but most of it is not. It's not yet at that point where it's what's called a contagion. A contagion market is when it really picks up, and fear begins to take on, and the people begin to say, uh-oh, something's going on. I'm pulling my money out to be safe, and it creates a cascading fall of the market. We're not quite at contagion yet. Most of the professional market traders will say it's at contagion when it hits the 10% point and it keeps going. A 10% correction. For a 10% correction, the market has to drop below the Dow. I'm going to use the Dow as a reference point. The Dow has to drop below 15,000. Okay, so that's kind of what's happening in the background stuff. What else is going on in some of the stuff that I see? What I've told some of you, and I've alluded to this in some of the emails, is the longer I am here, I'm getting the opportunity of people who are calling me, and people who I feel really know their stuff and they really know what's going on. And they're giving some good inside intel, but they remain quiet. So people are asking me, well, what do you think? What's going to happen? Is it going to happen this week? Is it going to happen next week? How long is this going to go on? And some of you are emailing me and say, I thought this was going to happen 2 months ago. I'm beginning to get concerned. Did I make a mistake, you know, by buying my dinar or buying my dong? Folks, here's what I see, and this is kind of a recap. First of all, let me say this. When anything happens that the markets go public, 800 numbers are released, I will immediately send out an email to everybody on my email list and make posts. So you can be sure that that will come. The other blog sites will be posting it all over the place. And if you have friends that are involved in this that are on Facebook, they're going to be posting on Facebook as well. Here's some of you ask, what do you see? What's your opinion about how all of this unfolded? And folks, this is just an opinion. I can be wrong on this because I don't have all the data and the facts. There's very, very few people that do. So I'm going to tell you how I see a scenario that has a probability, and it's only a probability of how this could unfold. There are reports going on that some people are already being cashed out. And you know what? I believe that is true. And there's a reason for that. Don't panic about it. Don't get worried about it. And don't feel that you're being treated unfairly. Two groups of people that are being cashed out. One group that I believe that is getting the higher rates and the stuff that is being reported on some of the other blog sites that these people are getting special treatment and getting cashed out, I think it's part of the sting operation. Because here's the word. They're not getting cash. They're getting what are called SKRs, safekeeping receipts. Their money is being put into a special account. The account is frozen, and they don't have access to the money. They are being given access to a small amount of it, but not very much. It's what they call traveling money. For those that are they're wanting to get access to through the sting operations, see, they've got the goods now and all these people. This is insider trading that's going on. That's one of it. The other part is those that were involved in this scenario, early on, they've been 6, 8, 10 years they've been involved in this, and they got in on some of the early group, private group lists. Some of those folks are being cashed out. But they're not being given cash. They're being given SKRs. And here's what some of the word had come to me. Folks, when they're having to go in, it's not like 20 minutes you're in and you're out. No, they're doing background checks on these folks, and they're giving them all this money. They're making sure that the money isn't going to go into drug dealing, and they're making sure it's not going to go into terrorist activities and stuff like that. They're having to check you out and go into this process. And so this is taking time. And so what they're doing, they're taking care of the private list first and just getting them out of the way before this goes public and the masses come in. Now, supposedly, one of the larger private lists, and these are the lists that closed back in the late summer that nobody can get into anymore, is the General 64 list. And supposedly that list is next. Now, when is this going to happen? I have no idea. It's a day-to-day basis. I think a lot of it is predicated around the sting operations going on. And whoever is in that decision-making mode, when that is ready, then that list is going to go forward. And supposedly right around the same time or shortly after is also when it goes public. And when it goes public, which means it's now going to be posted on all the foreign exchanges, the dinar has been revalued. And folks, when I say this, the information that I'm getting is it's just dinar only. It is not dong. It's dinar only. Now, I know there's lots of different opinions on that, but it will be dinar only. But remember, it's extremely important to understand the reset of the dinar and the revalue of the dong are two entirely different issues. The reset of the dinar is a single, independent, one country wanting to reset its money after it had been taken off the market 24 years ago. And they want to come back onto the market as everybody else. The dong is dependent upon a global currency reset. Now, most people feel both of these would take place at the same time, because of the issue, the probability of what is called double dipping. They could be done very independently of each other And double dipping can still be prevented by your access to these different currencies. And there are ways for them to prevent that without it taking place. I mean, the example would be the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank could make an agreement with the country of Vietnam that they will not sell any large amounts of their currency until the currency reset takes place. Only small amounts of currency can be purchased outside of the country as it's used for the intent of using the money if you should travel to the country of Vietnam and want their currency in country. It would not be allowed to be sold outside of the country. That's a way that you stop the double dipping. Okay? I think there's some very good reports that the groups, the private groups, could be funded by the end of the week. Some of that are actually really saying that. But folks, I have no idea how long that's going to take. I have absolutely no idea. I'm not getting reports from the inside intel folks on that. And if I did, I would have to have been very, very cautious about that, what was to be said, because we have to respect what is called the confidentiality that they are wanting, because they don't want to create a bunch of pandemonium and chaos. Now, here's a scenario that I think could possibly happen. There's still the issue of the global currency collapse. There is a possibility that the dinar could go public first, and the global currency collapse could take place, which would create a temporary crash in the market, is what it would do. This temporary crash in the market, what it would do, it would level the playing field with the people who are currently very wealthy and have lots of money, because they have money in the stock market, and the stock market could go from anywhere to a 30% to 50% drop in a couple of months. The U.S. dollar would probably go through a temporary collapse as well. And then what would happen is that could predicate the global currency reset on a global scale, because remember, over 99% of the people, population in the world, don't know what's going on with what we're involved in. And if you have too much happen too fast, it creates too much of a panic all around the world. So there's a process of all of this unfolding in a natural way that doesn't create too much pandemonium and chaos and possibly even create wars. And I think that's part of the scenario that can be unfolded. That's my opinion. That's just my opinion as a probability. Now, that's back. Let's make a little shift here. I want to talk a little bit about the transition theme that I put out in the video today. Over the last 2 and 3 weeks, I've been seeing this develop. I am a firm believer that history repeats itself. If you want to understand how that works, buy the new book by David Wilcock called The Synchronicity Key. In there, he talks about how he goes through, shows numerous of illustrations, gives great examples, even talks about the scientific research around how time works and how history and themes repeat themselves over various cycles. And it's because so that we as a human race can process the stuff that we go through of life on a bigger, grander scale. And one of the themes that I saw is what's happening with us in this global currency reset is beginning to parallel what is taking place or what took place in the biblical story of when Moses led the people of Israel out of the slavery and bondage from the Egyptians. Now, folks, let me stop right here. If you want to go ahead and call in tonight, I would say go ahead and start pressing your 1 to start lining up for us to bring you on the air. I'm going to talk about this for the next, maybe 3 to 5 minutes, and then it'll be time to get into some discussions and start taking, the calls from the callers, okay? So here's what's happening. Here's what I see happening on this historical parallel development. The people of Israel, the Israelites, the Hebrews, were basically in a slavery situation to the Egyptians. They had been in slavery for over 400 years. as this had built and built and built, their cries, they said, went out to the Lord, is what it had done. Moses comes onto the leadership scene, and through his leadership, he begins having meetings with Pharaoh and confronts the Pharaoh, and he says, would you let my people go? Originally, all they wanted to do was go on a three-day trip out into the desert to basically do their forms of worship as is a custom to their practices. And Pharaoh said no. And there was a series of meetings that went on. Moses would come in. Pharaoh would maybe say yes. He'd turn around, change his mind. The Bible uses the term is that he had a hardness of heart, is what he had done. And he actually imposed greater production upon the Hebrews in their slave labor. And it took multiple meetings that went on over and over again with delay after delay after delay. And does that sound like that something that we have been going through, multiple meetings, delay after delay after delay? Because Moses is fitting, the prototype of the Kabbalah. The Pharaoh was fitting the prototype of the Kabbalah, holding them in financial bondage, holding them in slavery, taking advantage of them, and the more they complain, the harder it gets. Do you think that hasn't been happening with us? And it continued to build, and then there was the series of the plagues that came upon the Egyptians, and it was like they slowly began putting their own noose around their own neck for the actions that they were doing, until it came to the point where Pharaoh said, leave. Just leave. Get out of here. Get out of our country. Get out of our land, and just leave and take your people with you. But here was what was interesting. It was a little known event, or I should say passage. It says in the Bible that the Israelites found favor with the Egyptian people, with the people. And the Egyptian people bestowed upon them their gold, their silver, and their clothing. Now remember, this was a group of people, the Israelites, who were in slavery. They didn't have hardly anything of their own possessions. Life was about simply existing day to day of existence, of working for the Egyptians and having enough food just to get by, and had very little life outside of that. And then all of a sudden, overnight, they found favor with the Egyptians, and the Egyptians lavished their wealth upon them. The Israelite people, in one day, were in poverty and in slavery. And a few days later, they had crossed the Red Sea, were out of the country of Egypt, were free, and were in wealth. They had gold, they had silver, they had clothing, they had food, they had livestock. They had stepped into a position of wealth. You can go in there, you read through the account, but here, and then they went through a position of basically a celebration, and we would do that too. We know. When the dinar reset happens, when the dong reset happens, when the money comes our way, there's going to be a celebration of joy, an explosion of joy for those of us who have had this experience. But here's what's interesting. They then set off on the wilderness journey. And it was a two-week journey to move into the promised land. And their goal was not living in the wilderness with money. Their goal was to move into the promised land that was filled with what is called flowing with milk and honey. It was a prosperous land. Their goal was to get there and get out of the wilderness. But when you read in the biblical account, it took them 40 years to make a two-week journey. And why was that? They were free and they were wealthy, but they had not yet transitioned from their slavery, poverty mentality, from their slavery and poverty belief systems. And when you read through the biblical account, you'll see that there were masses of them. They would complain. They would gripe. They would say, let us go back to Egypt. We would rather go back there. They had not yet learned how to become truly abundant people. And when I use that term abundant, I use the term abundance in the sense of fullness. Not only did they have physical wealth, but they also had the appropriate spiritual attributes and the appropriate belief systems that create the ongoing of abundance in their lives. That's what's the next step for us collectively. And folks, let me say something. I'm going to be really honest. Most of us don't know how to be in true abundance within our lives. We know how to possibly be wealthy. We know how to express our dreams. But here's the thing is, the journey from crossing the Red Sea to moving into the promised land of abundance is a journey that you will choose to make on your own. Yes, it will happen collectively, but there will be lots of us that can cross into the promised land before everybody else if we choose to learn how to heal and grow within ourselves. If we learn how to let go of old belief systems that have kept us in bondage. If we learn how to let go of certain attributes and aspects within us that have kept us in a place of fear, because fear is the biggest issue. Fear, anxiety, depression, the list goes on and on, the lack, all of those are aspects of the old belief systems of slavery. And I'm going to be very honest how I see this. Where you go to church, what you think of your theology, what type of doctrines that you have very little to do with that. It is not about an organized issue of faith that has been passed on to you from your pastors, from your churches, etc. It is about an individual spiritual responsibility. That is the difference between what I call the organizations and the institutions of religion versus individual spiritual responsibility. It doesn't make any difference what church you attend, what your faith systems are, or anything. It doesn't make any difference if you are Catholic or Protestant. It doesn't make any difference if you are Christian or New Age. It doesn't make any difference if you believe in spiritual gifts and miracles or if you believe in the channeled messages of angels. None of that is about that. It's about learning how you yourself, as your own individual, knows how to do what's called the clearing and the healing work within your own soul. In the Bible, it's called salvation. It's not about getting saved so I go to heaven. It's about understanding the full impact of the New Testament Greek word soteria. Soteria, salvation, was about healing. Healing of the soul. And the healing of the soul was a continuous, ongoing, lifelong process that will go on till the day that you die and transition from this planet. It is an always continuous, ongoing process. That is what brings about full abundance. When you've cleared out all of the old stuff and you move into a lifestyle of what Jesus says to love your neighbor as yourself, and you don't have conflict with that, you don't have resistance to that, you're not in a position where you're judging other people. You're not in a position of saying, my church is right and your church is wrong. My faith is right and yours is wrong. How I view the Bible is right and how you view it is wrong. And it doesn't make any difference whether you're coming from a Christian perspective or a New Age, New Thought perspective. It's none of that stuff. It's all about the inner condition of the soul and within your heart about where you're willing to move into that. That is the transition of true abundance. And what we are going to have the opportunity to do is to, if you liken where we are right now, still in a condition of financial slavery that has been imposed upon us by the cabal, by the Illuminati, whoever you want to call them. They have controlled the world's money and finances. And money and finances is a huge part of our everyday lives. I don't care who you are, what you think about it, you can't get away from it because you have thoughts of money running through your mind hundreds, if not thousands of times every single day. You get up in the morning and you think about, do I need to go shopping today? Do I need to go to the grocery store? Do I need to put gas in my car? And you're thinking about, do I go to this gas station or that gas station? When you go into the grocery store, can I buy this item or can I buy that item? It's all predicated around how you view money and how much money you have. What kind of a car can I buy? What kind of a clothes can I buy? Can I do this vacation or that vacation? Can I send my kids to college? Can I basically have this really nice Mercedes, or am I stuck with a 15-year-old car that needs repairs all the time? Those are thoughts about money and finances that goes on through our lives every single day. And for the vast majority of us, we're not necessarily, and we don't feel like we're slavery, because we could be defined as middle class in the United States. But here's what I define as financial slavery. You're not free to do what you want, when you want, to go where you want, when you want, and you don't have to think twice about, can I afford it? You're free when that thought, can I afford it, is no longer a part of your thought system and your vocabulary. You can just say, I can buy that. I have enough money to buy that. And you're free when you have learned how to manage your finances, so you will be able to still be saying that 10 to 15 years from now, not 6 months from now, because all of a sudden you became an overnight millionaire, but wondering where you're going to be in 15 years. You move from financial slavery into wealth because we become overnight millionaires, and then the real journey begins about being fully prosperous, fully abundant in all parts of your life. And you move into that when money no longer pulls at you. You're free from this inside drama, this inner chatter of all these thoughts about, can I do this, can I do that? There's a sense of peace, a sense of fullness, and a sense of freedom that you have within yourself. Now, I'm going to start a series of messages about the transition into abundance, how we do that. And I'm going to make this announcement now. I am putting together a one-day workshop. Well, where I will be about 6 hours, and I will take us through all this stuff. How do we transition? How do we change our belief system and yet still not give up the things that are important to us? It doesn't mean that you move away from your church or your faith or whatever it is. It means, how do you become fully, completely released and healed within your own soul, and it can fit to any one of you regardless of where you are and what your faith systems are. Any one of you can fit into that. How did you make those transitions? What are the things that you need to do? How do you recognize it? What are the disciplines in your life to bring that about? Then I'll also talk about, how do you handle your money? What should be your relationships with banks? How would you set up a business? What are the wealth management systems that you need to do? All of that in a single 6-hour, one-day workshop. And I'm going to start that out by doing it locally here in the area where I live, in Phoenix. Now, I don't have a date for that yet. And then after that, I'm going to start coming around the country. And I'll be doing that, coming around the country, bringing this workshop to wherever you want to be. Okay? All right. That's it for all of that general talk. Let's go to some of the callers and get into some discussions. For folks, if you want to now start, if you want to get in line, I only have one person who says they want to talk. So the rest of you want to talk, start pressing 1 on your touchtone phone. Penny will come in. We'll talk with you. So I'm going to a guy by the name of Ralph, area code 469, and Ralph lives in Texas. Ralph, welcome on the air tonight. How are you doing? What's your questions or what's your comments?
Well, I'm doing wonderful, and I thank you. This is my first time actually on your call. I've been reading your newsletters and listening to the archive version for quite some time, so I'm quite impressed, and I really appreciate what you're doing, and specifically, I look forward to that seminar about how to get out of debt thinking and into prosperity thinking.
What part of Texas are you from, Ralph?
I'm actually just outside of Dallas in a place called Plano.
Well, you know, I'm beginning to think that Dallas may be the second place I'm going to go because I'm getting a lot of contacts with people in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And, you know, I'll come and do one there. I love doing that. I've been listening to this one book that's been really helpful for me. And it talks about it's important that you begin to recognize the strengths in your lives and what you love to do and what are you good at. And I'm going to say it, I'm a really good public speaker. I love doing it. I have fun with it. And I always, and I'm a teacher at heart. And so it's a love for me. I feel like I'm stepping in and doing what I do well and what I love to do when I do that. So it'll be fun to come. I would love to come. I don't have any dates yet. And I'm already putting my workshop together that if the reveal has not happened, then I'll be talking about what do you do in the bank relations. If already has happened, then I'll be talking about where do we go here from now so that we take our money, learn how to use it wisely, learn how to educate ourselves, and learn how to free ourselves from an old poverty mindset. And that's a lifelong practice. That is not something that happens overnight. Okay, but
I've made some real good investments. I buy high and sell low over the time frame. So sure use some expertise.
I've done it too. We've all done it.
My question for this evening was, I've read recently in the last day or two about four different bankers who've actually died. A couple committed suicide. One jumped out of a 33-story window. And these are the Deutsche Banks and some of the others. And I was wondering, do you think that's part of the sting operation?
I would say we don't have enough information to give a qualitative answer to that. You know, a banker jumping out of the window and committing suicide could be just for the fact because he sees a global currency collapse coming and he feels like he's screwed up and he doesn't want to face his mistakes. You know,
but four of them in about 3 days?
No, because remember, I mean, you could have an individual branch manager that could be one of those. I mean, there are 40, 50, 80,000 banks around the country. You know,
one was CEO of a Deutsche Bank. One was another very high up. These were all very high up executives in several different banks, mostly in Europe.
Yeah, but you know what? That pales in comparison to how many fund managers and bank managers committed suicide when the stock market crash started happening in 2008. There were tons of them that were committing suicide.
Okay, well, I was just asking your opinion, what you thought, because I thought
right.
It probably was a connection.
Yeah, it could be, but we just don't know. I would say that it's not abnormal, but it makes news, and the news loves to put it out because it's spicy and sexy and bankers are committing suicide, and it captures our attention.
Well,
so,
some of those guys probably deserve it. No offense, but a lot of guys are just plain criminals.
And I know, you know, here's what I tell folks though: at the top of these big banks, yes, there's a lot of criminal activity that goes on. But I also tell folks, don't confuse that with the people who work at your branch in your local community.
Oh, absolutely.
Those are two. You know, sometimes we want to get mad and angry at the bankers, and then we carry that on to the people, to the tellers behind the teller window, you know, the lady that opens up your checking account and the branch manager at your local bank, when they have nothing to do with what goes on at the top level. And there's the vast majority of them are everyday people who are good, caring people who want to do a good job in serving us. Now, can some of them be kind of buttheads? Yeah, because they're just everyday people. In everyday walks of life, you're going to go into any type of an industry, and you're going to have the majority of the people are going to be good and caring people, and there's going to be a few that are going to be buttheads.
David, I
think
it's a real good discussion about that, about the regular people are really good people, and the ones that are at the top are the ones that are kind of the evil ones that are, you know, they know the agenda, and the rest of them don't have any idea.
I mean, you take a look at Bank of America, and what do they have, over 300,000 or 400,000 employees in the whole business, you know? And it's a handful. When I say a handful, it may be 20, 30, 50, 100 at the very top that are the decision makers that are pulling all of, you know, the illegal, you know, strings that go on. And the vast majority of people below that, they're giving us our everyday service about having a checking account, when we deposit money, when we don't, opening accounts for us and taking care of our everyday business stuff, you know, of where the big, huge stuff doesn't, you know, impact that. And so it's important that we still have respect for the everyday folks.
That's an excellent point. It's
usually a very small percentage that, and that's back again to what you would call the 1% slavery. It's the top 1% that create all these problems, and the other 99%, most of them, are just everyday people. They're our neighbors. They're the ones that our kids go to school with their kids, you know. That's the wonderful lady who has that, or even the gentleman that has that wonderful smile when you walk into the branch and you deposit your check. You know, treat them with respect and treat them with love. We're here to love one another. That's what's important that we do. It's easy to get caught up and get angry with all of them. So.
I completely agree.
Good. Well, thanks. Anything else?
No, that's about it for now. I really enjoy your show, and I'm glad I was able to get a chance to get on and listen to you in person this time.
Okay. Thanks. Appreciate it. Okay?
Yes, sir.
Have a good evening.
You too.
Okay. Well, next on the list, I'm going to a lady that I know. She used to live here in Sedona, and she now lives in Colorado. It's Judy. How are you tonight, Judy? It's nice to hear from you.
Hi. Thank you so much for doing this. I so appreciate you. I'm doing great, and you're right.
Good.
I wouldn't have made it here without your help, mentally, spiritually, and physically, so thank you for that.
Well, Judy, let me tell the folks what happened. It was a friend of mine, Don, and I. We actually helped Judy load up her U-Haul trailer when she lived here in Sedona at the storage unit. And you moved to Colorado. Was it Colorado Springs?
I live actually right outside of Steamboat Springs, but you're close.
Oh, Steamboat Springs. That's right. But, yeah, you had moved to Colorado, and so we knew you very well. You were kind of one of our neighbors here, and we helped you pack up and move all your stuff, and now you're in Colorado. So, okay, enough of that.
That's a blessing of extended family in the truest of heart sense, isn't it? No matter where we are, we're still connected at all times, huh?
Well, it's amazing how the Internet makes our world so small, doesn't it?
It does. It does indeed. And I have I was just telling Penny, I have Adi Ashanti on giving his Wednesday night talk on the laptop and you on my iPad. So it's really interesting to be in a balance about that. But I have, this is a question about the currency. I bought very little dong, I mean maybe $50 worth or something. And then I bought, I think, another $60, $70 worth of dinar, and then took your recommendation, I believe it came from you, to buy for $29 325,000 notes is what I'm going to call them. I don't know the name of the currency. And so I'm thinking that that's about $300,000 worth, and I'm wondering, I'm not looking to bankroll anybody, anything, or me, and it's not coming from a place of lack. It's just, it seems to me the way things will change or come about that I don't really need a $7 million home or spread or something. I can see wonderful ways to help the animal kingdom, the mineral kingdom, et cetera. But I'm wondering if I should buy a little bit more dinar, and I wonder if it's still there's still time to do it. What are your thoughts, please?
You can always continue to buy dinar as long as the broker dealers are selling it. And my thought is they will sell it right up to the time that it goes public. Now, that's just my opinion.
Oh.
But
mm-hmm.
You can always do that. And we need to remember that for dinar, you need to get it through a broker dealer online because the dinar is not available on the open foreign market. And then the dong is a currently traded currency. And also, it's what I had mentioned earlier. It's important for people to know that the dinar and the dong can be revalued at the same time, or yet they can be done independently of each other with some intervening time in between. I have a tendency to lean to thinking that's what's going to happen. I think there could be anywhere from 2 weeks to 2 months in between the dinar being revalued versus the global currency reset. Because the dinar is dependent upon a single country, Iraq. Mm-hmm. And we get lots of news and information and intel around that every single day. The dong is dependent upon the complete global currency reset, which is the cooperation of 180 different countries around the world. Mm-hmm. And so that will not happen until that takes place. They could both happen at the same time. They could not. The dong is a better value on your per dollar spent, but from a speculation perspective, I think the dinar is a safer purchase, which means it's more likely it will come through sooner, because there could be some things that could disrupt the global currency reset, and they could that could go on for 6 months to a year before that happens. We just don't know. Because one is a single country where the others is a complete global event. And so if I was in your shoes, Judy, I would do dinar over dong.
Okay.
I have both. Huh. I do both. It's kind of like a hedging. But I also want to know that if the dinar gets revalued tomorrow, and if it goes public tomorrow, I can walk into the bank and get some money tomorrow.
Go ahead.
Well, I think it's a safer. Uh-huh. The dinar is a safe, and when I say that, I'm talking from what is called a speculator who speculates on investments, and I've been a market trader for 17 years. There's always what is called a degree of speculation. What is your degree of risk? And the degree of risk is much, much, much less on the dinar than it is on the dong.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and I did go into a Wells Fargo bank, because just in what little bit of reading I had done hither and yon, it seemed as though Wells Fargo was possibly the most receptive or one of the more receptive to doing any kind of currency as if I traveled and come home, because there are a lot of folks from around the world live in Steamboat. And it was a young man that I asked at the counter, and it was like I had just announced to he and the two female tellers next to him that I was going to ignite the entire building in 1 second and blow us all up. They were like stunned. And he had to ask one of them, and they had a little confab in the corner. And by the time they all finished kicking and shaking and could reassume their bank face, he just said, no, we don't have that, we don't sell it, we don't buy it. It's like the poison snake in the drawer. So I thought at least they would be able to say, no, another branch does that, or you'll have to take it to Denver, something that couldn't even respond in a normal way.
Well, the bank employees at the branch level are kind of in a catch-22 scenario. At the top level, they're not telling their employees what's going on from the top, because imagine if you're a bank teller, you work, you don't make a lot of money, you're not a high salaried employee, and you hear about this opportunity to become an overnight millionaire because of this currency exchange, and your supervisors, your managers, and all the top management people know about it, and they're telling you about it. How long do you think you're going to stay an employee of the bank after the reval takes place? So from the very top management, they can't tell and come out with an official position this is going to happen, because they would lose half to three-quarters of their employees overnight. And then there's nobody there at the bank to do what we want to do to exchange our money. So they have to basically say no. From a legal position, they have to say no. And then from just a strictly operations position, banks don't exchange dinar because it's not an open tradable currency on the open foreign exchange market. They do dong, but the word is Wells Fargo has backed off on doing dong because there's so much controversy around it, and they just want to stay out of it. They don't want to get involved in creating problems, flare-ups, almost like hysteria in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things where they're caught in a catch-22 scenario. And so that's why if you go into a local bank and you ask them about it, most of them are going to say, we don't know about it, we're not doing it. Every once in a while, you'll find somebody who's really friendly who's going to tell you they really know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But they might be taking a risk to do that. I get reports of that. But the vast mm-hmm. majority of the people at the local branches can't talk about it.
I see.
And they're being told to not talk about it.
Good, yeah. though, because I'm blessed to the fact that I'm psychic and intuitive, and I say that in a modest
yeah.
way because I'm very blessed about that. But I was led. I thought I was going in to look at a sweater for my mom in a nice dress shop in Steamboat, and I went back to look at the sweater a second time, and the salesperson came over, a real nice lady. I'm just going to say it like this, a woman of means who works part-time in this dress shop for something to do. Waited on me, and somehow the conversation did not go to the items we're talking about, but I could see where she was going to travel to the East Coast and then she was going to move to Portland, and I could see that, and I was telling her that, and then somehow, I don't know how this came up, because you know how things happen, either I talked to her, said something about currency in different countries, you know, possibly going on the market for trade or something. I don't know how I said it. She said back to me, she said, I have been buying dinar. This woman is a mogul, or a muggle, if you read Harry Potter. She's not a wizard like us. She's a regular
uh-huh.
person. I nearly fell over, but I knew it was the message I went there for. It's
yeah.
amazing.
There, you know, it's really, you know, there's an organized media blackout on it, and it's one of those things that I think there's a higher divine or spiritual aspect where it's finding the people who are supposed to have it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how you accurately define that. But I thought,
mm-hmm.
why are we the 1.5% of the people in the United States, let alone around the rest of the world, who are doing this? And we deeply believe
mm-hmm.
it. And we really, and yet the vast majority of the countries in the world's population is still kind of blind or asleep to it. Now, part of it also is there's only so much dinar out there that can be purchased, and if all of a sudden it became public, they'd have to shut the whole thing down because
mm.
people would be clamoring for the dinar. And
mm-hmm.
if all of a sudden the banks came out and demanded it and it started being reported about on the national news that you can become an overnight millionaire, there would be literally hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people who would start going online to get this stuff overnight. And then
yeah.
it would create a mass panic or a
yeah.
mass rush. And then all of a sudden, the next thing you know, people will start selling their dinar on eBay and it will shoot up, you know, probably 100% or 1,000% of over what they could sell it for now because everybody wants it, you know.
Yeah,
so that's why it's not talked about. It could literally almost create also a run on the banks, possibly. It could create
yeah.
pandemonium and chaos if they went public with
mm-hmm.
it. And that's why part of the reasons why it doesn't go public. So,
well,
but
I appreciate your time.
But, you know, we're the fortunate ones. And I take that very seriously, and I take it very sacredly that I am
mm-hmm.
thankful to be a part of this for when it happens.
Mm-hmm. And I as well. Well, thank you very much. Good to visit with you as a friend and for someone who's really keeping us up front with what's happening. And bless you and Penny. Thank you.
Thanks, Judy. Nice to hear from you again.
Thank you.
Okay,
bye.
Good night. Yep. You know, it's one of those things, folks, it's really hard to decipher, you know, because we have to ask ourselves, why us? Well, believe it. Don't think that you're not worthy of it as well. Part of when I talk about the seminar, I'll talk about, there's a really, really good book by a guy by the name of Gay Hendricks. It's called The Big Leap. And in there he talks about what we have as our upper limit problem, is that we don't, sometimes subconsciously, we don't see ourselves worthy of having this much money all of a sudden overnight. And then what we do is we subconsciously sabotage ourselves or stop our upper growth and development. You see that a lot in what's called the lottery complex. The people who win the lotteries become overnight millionaires, and 3 to 5 years later, they're more in debt than they were when they started, and they've lost all their money. Because it's a subconscious thing that we create. And we all have issues of that within ourselves. And that's part of making that transition from wealth to abundance. Okay? All right. Going to go on to the next caller. And this gentleman is from Florida with an area code of 904. His name is Rob. Rob, you're on the air. How are you tonight?
Good. Thanks a lot, Dave. Appreciate you taking my call and always look forward to your newsletter.
Thank you.
My question is really more of the transition period, because it's really going to be the work that starts after this RVs. And there's just so many things out there that, you know, they're saying how the U.S. dollar is going to devalue. Do you actually keep your money as in two different accounts? So you've got dong and the dinar. Do you open two accounts? Do you actually maybe hold on to this? Is it going to be a float? Is it something that we cash in a little bit in and then wait? Or, you know, or do we go into gold and silver, because it's all going to be metal backs? Is that kind of the avenues? I'm just asking your thoughts on what you think of some of these transition periods, what to do after at RVs, because it sounds like there's going to be more work to be done after at RVs than just holding on the money.
You hit that right on the button, Rob. The real work starts when the RV takes place, because it's part of our educating ourselves how to be a millionaire, how to be making that transition from just being wealthy to also being, you know, what I call fully abundant. And that's a mindset issue. Now, on a practical perspective, it's really not a bad idea to have multiple bank accounts at multiple banks, not because of non-interest-bearing accounts, dinar versus dong or something like that. It's just because it's a good business practice, so that when you have that kind of money, you're developing relationships with people at the bank who will help you, and it's not a bad idea to have more than one. It's like getting a second opinion from a doctor. There's sometimes you're going to want to go in and get something done, and that banker will have one opinion, and you're limited now to that opinion if you're not educated on that issue. But if you have two or three that you can ask, then you're going to get two or three opinions, and so you can make a good opinion judgment for yourself. Now, the dinar, having the dinar in one account and the dong versus one account, there's no real deep reason to do that, other than it's just a simplicity of administrative stuff for you, and there might possibly be a difference on the taxation of the two, if depending upon how it comes out. We don't know those details. None of those details are out there. There are people that tell you put your dong in one account and your dinar in another account. If that makes you comfortable, then do it. But there's no really deep legal reason to have to do that, other than the fact that it's a simplicity issue for you, if that makes you feel good. I'm not going to separate it unless there's a specific tax reason. I will move my money into different accounts, not one in dinar and one in dong. I'll move it into different accounts because maybe I need to keep it separate for the simplicity of taxes. But yet I have other receipts for that. I may want to put it all into one account because it gives me more clout with a certain banker. You see, but it's, don't get caught into, it's a hard issue that you have to do that. There's also all this discussion about the non-interest-bearing accounts. Until the government takes action that there's going to be a difference between the currency that's gold-backed versus the old Federal Reserve notes, there's no real reason to do that. I come back and people will email me that question, and I'll say, why would you have $1 million sitting in an account that doesn't gain any interest? The only reason is you're fearful that the bank is going to steal your money or use a part of it illegally. And I thought, well, if that's the case, you'd be better off taking out cash and put it underneath the mattress in your home, because it's safer there. You follow me on that?
Right. People still have access to it anyway, right?
The question is, do you have access to your money, and is it in a safe place? you know, if the banks are going to crash, they're all going to crash, kind of money coming out. And at that point in time, it wouldn't make any difference where you have it. Because your money, whether it's gold-backed or not, it's still in a digital form. If the bank goes under, you've lost your digits. Now, gold may come back and, you know, put that up. The whole issue of making the transition to gold-backed currency, don't expect just this to have gold-backed currency and all the rest of those current money Federal Reserve notes that we have goes worthless. Because if that happens, you've just told 99% of the people in the world that the money went worthless overnight. Guess what? We're the new wealthy 1% that the rest is going to come after. See, that doesn't make sense. They're not going to allow that to happen, that 99% of all the money in the world is going to collapse overnight, and we're the only ones who have money. How long do you think your money is going to last, and how safe are you going to be if that happens? That's the type of stuff that creates panic and chaos and wars, you see. They will very likely transition the old Federal Reserve notes. They'll phase them in. They'll all have equal value, and they'll phase them out. They'll phase the new ones in and the new stuff out. We don't even know if the new, what we called asset-backed currency, is even printed up here in the United States yet, let alone around the rest of the world. So there's a transition phase going through all this, and a lot of it is we aren't going to know what's going to happen until it happens.
Yeah, that does help. You know, there's so much that's going on that non-interest bearing, whether or not you should be, have it, the freight dot backing. And I'm just like, if I had that kind of money, I just can't imagine wanting to just let it sit there and not make money on it. I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Rob, that's the example out of people, to me, making comments that are fear-based, which is still your old slavery mentality. Remember when I said it took 40 years for the Israelites to make the transition through the wilderness? Because they still had an old fear-based slavery mentality. And you can't take a slavery mentality into a promised land. That's the example of people who are wealthy, but they're not abundant, because they're still stuck into an old fear-based thought system and belief system that I have to have a non-interest-bearing account, have the money in separate accounts, buy a new computer, get rid of my old email, change my phone number. All that is fear-based stuff. It's all based on fear. Fear that somebody's going to come and take your money. You're still living in fear. You may be free physically in money, but you're still a slave in your mind. You're not abundant in your mind yet. And that's the transition that we will learn. And I come back again to the biblical example. There were many of the Israelites that were learning how to become abundant in their thinking, and there were still many of the masses that were still very fearful. Fearful that God was going to judge them. Remember when Moses goes up to the mountain and it's there that he has the burning bush experience? It's there that he receives the Ten Commandments on the tablets. In the meantime, the masses are still down below melting their gold to burn, to form their golden calves to worship. What was that? All based in fear. All based in insecurity. You see, they were still a part of the old mentality. They hadn't transitioned yet into abundance within their own souls and hearts. Is that going to happen with a lot of the people that are going to become overnight millionaires through the reval? Yes, it is. Because people are all over the place and have where they are in their belief systems and in their own conditions of their own souls and in their hearts about being free. So there will be a lot of people that will do stupid stuff like that.
What do you think about the metals? Do you think you're going to see those then?
About gold, here's what I think. Now, it all comes back to, and I've said this many times, I always ask myself the question when people look at something, you always have to come back to who's footing the bill for the reval. And there are three different scenarios. The first scenario is you have a limited amount of money around the world, and you are only operating as what is the current amount of money on the market right now. The second scenario are the oil credits, and then the third scenario are the thousands of trillions of dollars in gold that the Dragon family has. If people are saying that gold is going to skyrocket, most of those people who are coming from a perspective of the current existing financial system. If I'm interpreting it from that system, then I would say, yes, gold is going to explode, and I would be looking to buy gold. But then you have to ask the question, who's going to pay for all the dinar? Because if that's all the money that's available, there isn't enough money to revalue the dinar no more than 10 cents to 50 cents versus the $3.50 versus the $30 that I'm talking about. See, because there's a limited supply of money to cash it in with. That would, you see, that would make gold explode. Then, yes, gold would be a good value. Those who listen, you know, to me on the radio program here, you understand that I believe in the existence of the Dragon family. I believe in the existence that there's thousands of trillions of dollars of gold out there. And this is money that is to help us make a change in the whole human race, not just let a few 1% of us become overnight millionaires. And with that amount of gold that is there, what that means, that amount of gold now comes from what is called off-market to on-market. Right now, the amount of gold that is available to be traded on the current market is less than 10% of all the gold that we have here on the planet. That's been controlled and manipulated by the Federal Reserve and the cabal. They limit the amount of gold that is on the market so they can control the price of gold. See, gold right now is what, $1,300, $1,400 an ounce, $1,200 an ounce, somewhere in there. It's a hyperinflated value that is not a real market value. The last time that we were on a gold standard in 1971, gold was only $35 an ounce. If we go back to a gold standard and all this gold the Dragon family has comes onto the market, then gold is going to collapse. It will go back to its fair, nominal, true market rate. And you've now brought literally, you know, a 500%, 1,000% amount of gold onto the market because it's going to back all these new currencies. In that scenario, I would see gold dropping to somewhere between $200 to $300 an ounce. That would be the fair market rate of where it was at $35 plus inflation since 1971. That's why I am not purchasing any gold. I would not purchase gold today. That's my own personal opinion. That's my personal opinion. Because, see, if gold backs all of these currencies and we have a massive amount of new gold on the market, gold is no longer used for investment purposes. It's no longer the standard for investment. See, gold goes up because it's a hedge against inflation. And when you have fiat-based currencies, you always have inflation. So people buy gold. The more they buy it, drives it up. Well, when you go to asset-backed currencies, you no longer have fiat currencies. You now have stability. So gold should return to its fair nominal price. Does that make sense?
Point does. I've always it's so high now. I mean, it just continues going up, and I just don't know how much of that is, you know, with the Federal Reserve, how much is really how much of that is manipulated? Because how do you know how much gold there is? I mean, I don't know. It's gold. I mean, I can understand the asset back, but you know, to print money like it's just, you know, anytime they want money, they can print it. So how do you place value to it?
You can't really post a value to it because it's not a fair value. We are in a time right now where the stock market and the price of gold and the price of oil are all falsely manipulated. They're not real true market values. Now, is there possibility of money to be made in that? Yes, there is, because the stock market is going up. You know, it's gone up very well in the last couple of years, and gold has gone up. See, but here's what I would say, it's not stable. That's the issue. It's extremely volatile. And if you're going to invest in the market. And if you're going to invest in gold, just know that's very volatile and be aware of the fact that you need to watch it almost on a daily basis. And you need to set a limit for yourself should it fall of where you're going to pull out. Because is it going to create anxiety for you? Is it going to create chaos for you? Is it going to create fear for you? It does that to a lot of people. So I would say, you know, I taught a class on market trading and online market trading. And I always said, as a trader, the very first and most important thing that you need to learn is your own personal risk tolerance level. Because everybody's risk tolerance level in trading or investing is different. Learn that for yourself, then it's going to drive you crazy through anxiety and fear is what's going to happen. Because you don't have a basis to when to judge for yourself, when should I get in, when should I get out. And then what you're usually doing, you're making decisions that are too late and you're losing money. So to be a market trader, you always have to ask yourself that first question and learn it for yourself because it's different for everybody. So is there money to be made in gold right now? Yeah, there is. Is there money to be made in certain stocks and trading right now? Yeah, there is. But it could also fall apart tomorrow because it's very unstable right now.
Well, I really appreciate your time. This has been very helpful, and I really enjoyed it. So.
Good.
It's just really, I tell you, though, there is a transition period. There's just so many things that need to really have a plan to kind of get a vision of what you're going to do, because I'm personally not ever going to be in a position to gain this kind of wealth again. And I'm like, what am I going to do?
You know, what I share with folks is most of us don't know how to be millionaires. The people who are millionaires, most of them, they gained that money over a period of time, either through their own business practices because they had their own businesses that became very profitable, or maybe they inherited it. And if they inherited it, it means they were around it. So it wasn't something that came to them overnight. And so what I say for most people is when you get your money, there's a few things that are very wise and prudent to do. First of all, pay off all your debt so that doesn't hang on you. Secondly, celebrate. Go take a vacation. You earned it to a certain degree. Celebrate for yourself personally. Experience the joy. Experience that something new has happened in your life that is so absolutely wonderful. And then after you've done that, if you need to give money to your family, give money to your family and your loved ones. And then take what you have and wait until you can make a wise and prudent decision of what to do for your money. You need to take a part of it and set it aside for taxes. You want to take a part of it and set it aside for long-term security, financial security for yourself. And then you need to take some time to educate yourself how to make good decisions. And I wouldn't do too much too rational until you've gone through that, because then you know your money will last for you. The lottery complex of the people who lost a lot of their money, they didn't do that stuff. They didn't know how to use their money wisely, and they spent it too much, too fast, too foolishly, and the next thing you know, it was all gone. And there will be people who will do that. But I want to be here to help people through this process to say, be wise and be prudent. Realize the fact that maybe...
You had a good reading on abundance, on abundance thinking, or a reference to that? I don't know if I heard you correctly on a good read, just kind of on a different mindset.
See, to me, abundance is that you're not only wealthy materially and physically, with a lot of money, but you're wealthy within your soul. You're clear. You're centered. You're making good decisions. You're being a philanthropist with your money. Not only are you giving your money away, but your money is also growing so that you can continue to stay in this place. You're at peace within yourself around money. You don't have a lot of fear. You don't have a lot of anxiety. You're not having stress over it. You're not fighting with your spouse about what you're going to do with your money. That's when you become fully abundant, because you're at peace within yourself emotionally and spiritually, and you're wealthy physically with a lot of money as well. That's the fullness of abundance. To me, that's what abundance is. And a lot of us, we're going to become wealthy materially overnight, but learning how to become truly abundant is a process that will, and that's a process we'll all go through.
Well, this is a great discussion. I really appreciate it. Thanks for your time.
Okay. Right. Thanks, Rob. Have a good evening. Right. Okay, good night. Okay, next I'm going to Mark. Mark in Virginia. Mark, it's coming up. Let's see, I clicked on you. You should be, there we are. Hi, Mark, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, Dave, I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I am doing really good tonight. How about you?
Good, really good, really good. I've got two questions, and let me refocus here because I'm listening to what you were saying. And two questions. One is if the dinar happens to reset and that money comes through before the dinar, is there anything that could stop me from going out and buying more dinar?
You mean dong?
I'm sorry. Let me say it again. I'm sorry. If the dong, well, let's just say the dong happens to the currency resets and the dong, you get your money for the dong first, okay? And later on, the dinar would revalue, okay, to get your money. But what I'm wondering is if the dinar, say, would reset first and you get your money, and the dinar has not revalued, is it legal? Is it okay to go out and buy some dinar?
In current situations, yes, you could do that. See, but that's what they refer to as double dipping. And if I'm hearing you, Mark, let me give this illustration. Let's say the dinar revalues first and you just got yourself $1 million and you want to take $50,000 of that and go buy some dong, which you're assuming is going to revalue later, and now you'll end up with $100 million from the dong. That's what's called double dipping, and that's what they want to prevent. Now, that's why most people say both the dinar and dong will go at the same time, because they don't want that to happen. But what I come back and say is there are ways to, the most important, I think the International Monetary Fund, the World Banks, the different countries involved, they don't want double dipping to go on because it creates too much of an explosive response. See?
Okay.
Can you do it? Yeah. And is it happening right now? Yeah, that's part of the sting operation that's going on, is because they're catching people who are double dipping when they had signed an NDA agreement and a legal agreement to not do that. They weren't supposed to do that, but they're doing it. And that's part of the sting operation that's going on right now. They're catching these people. But it's back to the fact they weren't given cash. They were given SKRs, which means it's a digital receipt and the money is in a fund, and they've now got the hard evidence to serve the warrants on them for their arrest for insider trading.
Okay,
there's a lot of that that's going on. Right. See, that's what's going on. So, yes, under the current right now scenario today, you could do that, but in my opinion, the powers that are working on this, of all the reval taking place, they're going to make sure it doesn't happen, because it just creates such a pandemonium and chaos. Situation. Yeah.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. But I just thought I'd ask. Okay. Question number two, Dave, is I know you have to have the proper paperwork for your dinar. Do you have to have a proper paperwork for the dong and the Zimbabwe dollar?
What are you calling proper paperwork? I don't know of any proper paperwork that you have to have.
For the dinar, you have to have a certificate saying where you got it, you know, that you got it legally.
No, you don't. No, you don't. It's currency. Just like taking a $100 Canadian bill into a bank and say, give me American money. Give me U.S. money. Currency is currency on the public rate exchange open market. Now,
okay.
They don't. I have not. I know people have said that, but I have not found anywhere legally that you're saying that has to happen, and that is not standard operating procedure of a bank with a currency exchange. So, but could it possibly happen in the private group? They may say, bring in your receipt. We don't know that. But there's nothing etched in stone on that, that has to happen.
Okay.
Here's what we do. There's the private exchanges, and then there's the public open market exchange where you just take your money into the bank. Well, when you just take your money into the bank, they're going to exchange it just like any other currency. So there's none of this stuff that has to go on as far as having, you know, your receipts, because the receipt doesn't prove anything. Currency is currency.
If
let's say you're in Canada and you want to exchange an American $100 bill in Canada. They're not going to ask you for, where's your receipt where you got that $100 bill, you see. No.
Yeah.
Is the currency a good currency? Yeah. If it's a good currency, it's a good currency regardless of how and where you got it. And it's currency to the person who is bearing it at the moment.
Okay. Oh, well, okay. So, all the same, I'll go ahead and keep my paperwork for my dinar just to be on the safe side.
It's not a bad idea on the safe side, but and for tax reasons, you know, whether it's short-term or long-term capital gain taxes, which we don't know what is the outcome of that's going to be, you would need your receipts for when you purchased it. If you were to get long-term rates versus short-term rates, you would need that. But that you only need that if the IRS audits you. It's only in an audit would you need to bring that forward. So, yeah.
Right. That's speaking of the tax deal, I've heard that you make sure when the dinar revalues, make sure you check with Wells Fargo because the Chinese own that, and you might get a higher rate, and they may possibly treat it as a commodity instead of capital gains, which, of course, you pay a whole lot more than capital gains.
Well, that was the news back in the summertime, and then it kind of shifted around for a period of time. And here's where I understand it is now, but again, none of this is etched in stone because we don't know, and there's different opinions all over the map on this. But what I understand is the people that got onto the list, the private list that closed, that were a part of the oil credits contract, those contracts are going to be honored, and the word is, if you're on that contract, you don't have to pay tax because China is going to pay the tax for you as a part of the agreed-upon contract between China and the United States with the oil credits issue. That is where the scenario is, as I understand it, where the tax rate would be different. Other than that, everybody else is going to have to pay capital gains taxes because a currency exchange is considered a capital gain. And then your capital gain rate is dependent upon how long you held the currency from the day that you purchased it to the day that you cashed it in. And again, folks, you can go back to my website. You can read through that on that Q&A article that I have there, and I lay that out in there. It's again, Mark, we don't know what's going to happen until it happens because people have different opinions. And it's all speculation.
But we know they're probably going to get 30 or 40% or more off some of us, right?
Well, capital gains rates on short term, which means you've held the currency for 1 year or less, is 39.6% at the top spot. And most of us are going to be at the top spot. So, you know, almost all the blog posters have said, plan on the fact that you're going to pay between 40 to 50% in taxes. Because you may have to pay your state tax, and your state tax is different in every state. Now, long-term capital gains is 20%. And that's if you've held it for 1 year or more. There may be a scenario. If you're not a part of the private exchange rate, and you're going to exchange at the open public market exchange, that it may be worthwhile, and you say it was 10, 11 months ago, it may be worthwhile for you to wait until you move into the long-term rate because you're taxed in half. And that can be a lot of money for a lot of people. For some folks, that can be over $100,000 savings by just waiting for another month or two. The one-year mark is the different mark. If it's less than 1 year, it's long-term. It's more than 1 year, it's short-term. And it's not when the RV takes place. It's the day that you cash it in. See, that's the key. Because a capital gains is not experienced until it is realized, and it is realized when it is exercised. And that would be the day you exchange the currency, in contrast to the day that you bought it. So.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, that's a better deal. But I'm hoping some of these politicians get caught in this stuff so they know what it's like to get ripped off. Well, that wouldn't be ripped off. I'd just like to see some of them get caught up in this thing.
They will. I mean, if they've been involved in the insider trading, they've got the goods on all of them, and the ones that are involved in it will end up being served warrants. They will.
I hope they go to jail.
Yeah.
Maybe our taxes will suddenly get lower.
Well, it probably will, because the government has really trillions of dollars in dinar, and it's supposedly all used to pay off our debt. I think we'll see a lot of changes I don't think they'll necessarily happen overnight. They'll be phased in, the new changes with the new economic system that will come our way, but it's going to take some time for that to happen. So
it'll take a few years probably for it to get going, because I know.
Yeah.
Like you said, I'm going to really study this thing out and be careful where I put my money. Won't put all of my eggs in one basket, and I'll be do a lot of studying, talking to a lot of people, some people that know what's going on.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm going to be very. I've lost money, and lost everything I had once. And that was enough. A couple of homes, a couple of pieces of land, some money, that's enough. I don't need to do it again.
I think the important thing is just don't do too much too fast. Take your time in making your decisions and make good decisions.
Pray, ask God for wisdom. He willingly gives it. You were going to say something there, Dave. What was it?
Oh, no. I'm okay. Any more questions,
okay.
Mark?
No. Thank you, Dave. Thank you very much. And
good. How's your weather in Virginia?
Well, it's pretty cold. Still have snow on the ground. It's cold. It's going to be cold for one more day and then warm up. And I tell you what, I was thinking about moving to Alaska. I think I'll go there. When the money comes through, I think I'll have a summer home there.
A summer home in Alaska.
Yeah.
Well, it was 67 degrees today here in Sedona, Arizona. Slightly overcast skies. I'm not missing the cold Northwest where I used to live. So.
Oh wow.
And I know the Midwest and the Northeast and Atlanta had snow, 2 inches of snow today. They got paralyzed. Two inches of snow.
They had a rift that came down that way. It's freeze, ice, snow, so forth. Last week. It was really cold here, like 4 degrees, and in Anchorage, Alaska, it was like 34 degrees.
Yep.
So,
yeah, I know.
I might change my tune. I'm gonna have to keep looking at it, but there's nothing wrong with having a summer home in Alaska and then a home down here, and private jet too, and there's nothing wrong with that. So I'm gonna take my time though.
Okay, Mark. Well, thanks for calling.
Thanks.
Have a good week.
Thank
okay.
you.
All right. Okay. Good night. Yeah. Good. Okay. All right. Well, folks, it's really important, I think, as we transition into this time to take your time. Don't be rash about your decisions. That's just a good, wise way to go about that. Okay. Okay. I'm going on to the next caller. And this wonderful lady, we were emailing and back and forth on Facebook today a little bit. And I have been looking forward to this conversation with her here tonight. and she's coming on the air. She's from Fort Worth, Texas. And Charlotte, how are you tonight? Are you there? Hello, hello. Did I lose you? Oh, it sounds like you're trying to come on, Charlotte. Are you there? Hello, Charlotte in Fort Worth, Texas. Something's happening. We're not making a connection here. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to put you on hold. Boy, I'm hearing like you want to connect, and I'm not hearing anything from you. Boy, I'm sorry, my dear. Let me put you on hold, and I'll see if I can come back to you and in just a minute, okay? All right, because what I'm going to do, I'm going to go ahead and move on to the next caller, and then I'll try to go back to Charlotte. Okay, and so I'm going to go ahead and take her on right now, and it's Taylor, who lives here in Sedona, is one of my neighbors in the area. Taylor, how are you tonight?
Hey, I'm great. Thank you so much for asking. How are you?
Good. Would you do me a favor? I can hear
yeah.
you in the background, so make sure you turn. You either need to step away from your computer because we're getting a delay and I can hear it in the background.
Okay,
or
I turned it down.
In.
Is that better?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay.
Now you're good.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. I wanted to ask you, when you're speaking of the private exchange, is there only one? Is it the Wells Fargo dash Casey Manna?
I don't know. What did you say after the Wells Fargo dash what?
Casey Manna.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
That's the General 64 group. That
right.
is, now, again, none of this is etched in stone, but that is the one. That was one of the groups, of the larger private groups. They cut their list off in the late September.
Right.
And when the email comes through, it comes through as Casey Manna. And those are the ones that are supposedly in with the oil contract that works through Wells Fargo. If you go back to, you know, that article that I wrote back in September on the Q&A article, and I talked about the oil credits contracts, supposedly those are still being honored and those that are a part of that group. And there's I think TNT Tony has his own private group that was cut off. There was called an Admiral group and a couple of others. And then the
yeah.
General 64 group. So, but all those groups have been closed, and nobody can get into them. But yet,
right.
there's a lot of us, you know, that got into that before the groups were closed.
Because
so.
Now, according to Tony's call this morning, there's international U.S. citizens contract and Chinese, and it doesn't say anything. He didn't say anything, you know, about a group. But he really hasn't been fond of groups right from the beginning.
Well, my understanding is the contract, as I read through that as well, and the contract would be referred to as the contract groups. That's the private groups would be the contract.
Oh.
But that's how
oh, really?
I understand it. That's how
yeah.
I understand it. But again, it's not defined. They don't give you the parameters. And so it's still speculation until we get the full picture. So.
Okay, because then the contract group are the ones that have to sign the NDA. So my question to myself this morning was, now
well,
I
we don't know that for
certain.
We don't know that for certain. There's opinions all over the map on that.
Oh.
I am hearing, yes, the private contract folks
uh-huh.
do have to sign an NDA, and the intent of it is to keep it quiet until it goes public, and then once it goes public, then the NDA falls off. But again, it's all speculation. All the stuff on NDA
yep.
is speculation. Nobody's come out with any hard facts on it yet.
Yeah, because when you hear another side of it, it's kind of scary that it can be really, if you're signing an NDA, you could really be making a contract with that bank. And
yeah.
as far as like them taking over for stocks and annuities and stuff like that, and that certainly would not be, you know, that I certainly don't want to do that. So I guess, as you keep on saying, we just have to wait and get some more information. So
yeah,
okay.
It's back to we don't really know what's going to happen and until it happens. But I just have this sense. You can feel it building. You can feel it getting
oh, yeah.
closer. And I think
mm-hmm.
the key to all of this is when they're done with the sting operations. I think that's when it's going to all open up and come out. And that's the key, because if you come back, if you acknowledge the fact that the Dragon family is the ones that are funding this, and if you acknowledge the fact that they see this as a much larger issue for the whole of the human race, where we as the human race is the first step of us being freed from this financial tyranny, this financial slavery, the last thing they are going to do is allow this money to be released and the cabal gets to stay wealthy and in power and control. They will not allow that to happen. And so when they feel they have enough information that the sting operations are ready to be done, that's when it's going to be released. And none of us know when that's going to happen because none of us are involved in that. There's just a
few
key people.
So it has nothing to do with the Chinese New Year? I'm sorry, I don't know if
you
heard
know,
me.
I heard you.
Oh, okay.
It could, but we just don't know. I think everything else is secondary to that.
Yeah.
It's like if you put it on a scale of 1 to 10, the sting operations is a 10, and nothing else is higher than a 7 or an 8. Everything else is secondary to that. And that's how I view it.
Yeah.
And so The Chinese New Year can come and go. Christmas came and go because they were talking about the Christmas season. You know, Thanksgiving came and go. October came and go. The budget shutdown came. Those were all supposed to be things that were going to affect the reval. It never happened. It's because the sting operation's not done. That's how I see it. Now, that's my opinion.
Yeah.
Other people's different on that. And I think everything is secondary to that. Everything is.
Okay,
so,
I have one last concern or comment or question. And
sure.
That is, there was a time when people were in one camp, and that was Iraq, and there was other, and they were either in Iraq, Parliament, or just the RV. And now it seems to me that it is one camp is still, of course, the RV, and the other one is the return of the Republic. Does that make sense to you? Is that
they can, but I still think they're just secondary issues to the sting operation. They are not items that are going to determine if it is or if it not is going to happen. They may be secondary issues of a possibility of when, but they're all secondary to the sting operation. You know?
Well, can I tell you what my wishes are?
Sure.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Can I tell you what my wishes are?
Yeah.
Okay. I wish that, of course, the RV happens by the end of the month, and then gradually, I don't know if it can be gradual, that will go from the United States Corporation to the United States Republic. My understanding is, and this is pretty loose, but doesn't the whole thing have to collapse, the corporation, for the Constitution to come alive?
Well, it doesn't necessarily have to collapse. For the Republic to come into being, here's how I see it. Our Constitution is still in place, operational, but it's being overweighted by the Federal Reserve, a private corporation that controls the world's money supply. And because almost everything that we do involves money, it then suppresses the Constitution operating in its true perspective. And for that to change, what we have right now in law is Congress has to basically pass the law to say, Federal Reserve, you're done, you're gone. When that happens, it then allows the Republic to rise up to its true setting. Because the Constitution is in place. To me, nothing has to change in the Constitution itself. It's just what is oppressing the Constitution has to be removed. And that is the Federal Reserve going away. The Federal Reserve no longer has the power to use their influence over money that influences almost everything that we do. Everything that
okay.
we do is influenced
okay.
by the power control of the Federal Reserve controlling the money. But
okay.
there's that can happen one of two ways. Number one, Congress passes a law that says the Federal Reserve, you're gone, you're history. They have the ability to do that. Or number two, the only other way I see that could happen is we have basically what's called martial law, and the white hats of our military take over the control of the country for a short period of time and in essence say, Congress passed the law or we're creating a complete revolution within the country. Now, that creates chaos because, again, you know, we still live in a country that a good 60 to 70% of the people in this country think the Federal Reserve is a government agency, and it's not.
Yeah,
you see,
I know.
What would happen if the military came in and pulled a military coup here in the United States? It would create pandemonium and chaos. Fear, pandemonium, chaos, rioting, mm-hmm. possibilities of internal civil war if that was to happen, because they don't know the true story. So it has to happen slowly, internally, over a period of time. And the key is the remove, to me, is the removal of the Federal Reserve. Now, different people have different opinions on that, but that's how I see it. So, okay?
I don't think Miss Yellen would be very happy. Didn't she take office today? Or did Bernanke just go?
No, I think she
anyway.
Takes office on the on, I think she takes office on the 1st. In a couple of
okay.
days.
Okay.
That's what it is, yeah.
Okay. So, well, I'm betting on the white knights, the white hats. And,
oh, I am too.
Gradually.
I am.
Yeah. Okay.
I am too. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your time. And I will, I'll be talking to you soon, or listening at least.
Thanks, Taylor.
Okay. All right. Bye.
Okay. Okay. Good night. All right. See, folks, you know, different people have different opinions on the whole issue about the power of the Federal Reserve. I think there's a possibility that the Federal Reserve can go under because there's news reports coming out that the Federal Reserve is about ready to go bankrupt. There's been news reports coming out that China is going to buy out the Federal Reserve. Because remember, the Federal Reserve is a private corporation. If they're a private corporation, they can go under and go bankrupt and go away that way because they are no longer fulfilled their function. That is a possibility of what could happen instead of martial law, also instead of Congress passing a law, because I think Congress is just too caught up with the current makeup of Congress that they would never do that. That is a possibility that how that could happen is that they could end up going under through the pressure that comes from the coalition of the 180 other countries around the world. And that would take time to unfold. Okay, but that, it's one of those things where you don't really know what's going to happen until it happens, but there's different possible scenarios. Now, I am going to try to go back to Charlotte in Fort Worth. And Charlotte, I've brought you back online. Can you hear me now? You're on the air.
I can hear you now. I'm so sorry.
There you are. I got you this time. How are you, my dear?
Awesome. You are, you know, God just opened that door and I found you randomly. One of the things when I wrote down in the very beginning of this call, if there are brand new people on here, little newbies, what do you define the cabal as?
The cabal would also be the Illuminati. The cabal would be those that are part of what they call the New World Order. The cabal would be the ultra elite, the 1% that control the Bilderberg group. The cabal would be the ones that just controlled the Davos meeting in Davos, Switzerland. The cabal are those that control the world's money supply. They have been doing this for centuries.
Would that also include the Federal Reserve included in that?
Yes, they basically own and control the Federal Reserve. There are four families that own and control the Federal Reserve because the Federal Reserve is a private corporation. And they do this very quietly. They do not come out in the public. They are not a part of the public sector, but it's part of their addiction to power and control. And it has always been their goal to have to create a one-world government and a one-world currency. It's always been their goal to do that. And they do that through controlling the world's money supply. The Rothschilds family are the strongest family that is there. They are the strongest banking family in the world. And one of the Rothschilds is always famous for a quote. They had said, "Give me the control of a country's currency, and I will control the country regardless of what laws they pass." Do you think they haven't done that to the United States?
Amen.
I think they have. I think they have. See, they said, "We will control the country regardless of what laws they pass." They have controlled our financial system. They have manipulated markets, banking supply, money. Talked about a lot of this, Charlotte, a couple weeks ago when I talked about, you know, the global currency reset. And I talked about the book that David Wilcock wrote called Financial Tyranny and how the Federal Reserve printed up $27 trillion and passed it out to banks around the world since 2008. And the public doesn't even know that. See, and they control the media.
The public doesn't really care.
They're asleep. They're what I call asleep. They're not really awake and aware. They're just going through the daily functions of making my job, living my life, feeling good, taking care of my family, and totally asleep to what's going on around them. Does that mean they're bad? No. It just means they're asleep. And it's a transition that we all make. I used to be asleep around this stuff.
Well, me too. All of us.
Yeah.
This is so huge, new to me. And another question I was thinking about, you know, you're talking about the really smartest people in the money markets in our country are, you know, in the stock market and all those guys up there. How do they not know, or are they just trying to protect their jobs and protect the market, so to speak, Wall Street I'm talking about? So they're so smart in the money world, and then just totally seem to be oblivious to what's really going on. Is that true?
Well, about 80% of the daily trading that happens on Wall Street is done by the institutional traders on Wall Street, 80% of the daily volume. So the institutional traders control and run the market. The vast majority of them are everyday workers like you and me, but they have the potential to make so much money, and such very good money, that it's an addiction that blinds them to what's going on the larger scale. They become so focused and addicted to, how much money can I make today? And am I going to get my $3 million bonus at the end of the year? And how wealthy can I get? Because they're caught into the sea of endless possibility about how much money they can make. And they're competing with each other. And so they get so seduced and almost in a trance of how much money can I make for me, care what else is going on somewhere else. Because right now, I'm making millions of dollars a year, and I'm having a lot of fun at it, and I really enjoy it. But I don't know that I'm seduced into it, and I don't know and recognize that I'm addicted to it. But most of them are in that situation. And then it's those that at the power in the top that have that control, because they know that most of the market traders are caught into a trance of addiction in their daily job.
Isn't that the truth of America? Now, I'm absolutely committed to a place that's called the Hope Center Without Walls Church, this little place that feeds thousands of people, tens of thousands of people a year in Fort Worth, Texas. And when I walk through that little place, I watch this. It's just overwhelming. It's like feed me. Whatever that movie was, it had that feed me, you know, that plant, I think it was.
You know,
yeah,
I think,
and this, but the deal is, then I want to go home and watch Jerry Springer. I mean, it's just feed me and let me go and get my cable TV. And it's a sad mentality that I'm seeing. And I'm looking, when I'm there, I'm like, I'm in a bad place right this second, but not my lifestyle, not my generational curse or whatever it is. And I want to change something there.
See, Charlotte, I think it's the part of what is called the financial slavery. The vast majority of the world's population.
The government has to take care of our. The government has to take care of our needs, so that we can enjoy our wants.
But it's an almost a trance type of a slavery. You get caught into the routine of, I want to, of what is presented to us of what we should do, and we get stuck in this box of create a career, go get a good job, make some good money, have a family, retire, and do well, and then I'm oblivious to what goes on around me. But yet I may be involved in a couple of my charity groups and organizations. I may be helping people who are less fortunate, but I'm still okay. And the masses get caught into that, and they are oblivious or blind or not awake to the power and the control of this ultra-wealthy 1%. And, Sharla, I was guilty of that for most of my life. We all are. And the important thing is to not fall into a place of guilt ourselves for having been that way. It's what's called the human condition that we have lived in. And what's happening is we're starting to wake up. The masses are starting to wake up and say, something's not right here.
I really thanks to you, Dave. And that's huge. Because, and you were talking earlier about the word abundance, and I have a definition of the word prosperity. And the word pros to me means complete peace. And
yes.
Prosperity and complete peace absolutely being
and it's,
the goal
yeah, it's,
of my I mean, not just money, but every way. Anonymous
and
generosity is my goal, but that's huge.
It's an internal peace. It's that peace internally.
It's understanding.
Yes, it's that verse in Philippians where it says, the peace of God that passes all understanding. It's an internal state. It's an internal state of being. It's an internal condition. And that is our goal that we come to. And that is where, and most of us aren't there. Okay, Charlotte, I'm sorry that this happened, but, you know, I'm down to a minute and 30 seconds left.
Oh, my gosh.
So let me just say this. You're going to have me on your radio program in about another month. I want to thank you for that. And tell us really quickly, what is your radio program? Because your program comes on Thursday mornings from 11 to 1 o'clock. Is that correct?
11 to 1 Central Time, the Charla A Show. And on Fishbowl Radio Network. So Fishbowl or fishbowlradio.com or fbrn.com. And you want to click on tomorrow, I'm going to have an amazing man that has lost so many tragedies, and he's an overcomer, Philip Hatfield.
Okay.
Amazing young man. So fishbowlradio.com
at
11 a.m. Central Time.
Call me back next week, and I'll give you more time to talk about your radio program, because right now, in 30 seconds, I'm off the air.
Oh, my gosh.
So,
I love this whole thing.
Thank you. I wish we would have had more time to talk, but I'll call you up on the phone privately maybe in the next couple of days, and then we can talk some more,
Let's
okay?
Let's get it figured out. Yes, sir.
Great. Thanks, Charla.
Let's get it figured
okay,
out.
All right.
God bless.
Okay. All righty. Okay. Well, folks, thank you very much. I'm coming down. I've only got about 10 seconds left, and I'm done. So hope you enjoyed the program tonight. Love you all. We'll be back again next week. Okay, good night.